Hello there. I didn't get a chance to say anything.
Good afternoon. We're going to bring the House Committee on Education to order and begin our process here. I'm Lou Frederick, State Representative from District 43 in Northeast Portland. And our fearless leader, Margaret Doherty, is drifting down the Rhine River, I think, right now.
Oh wow!
On a cruise through Germany and several other places. So she is not upset at all about not being here at this particular point, from what I can gather. The pictures that I've seen are very, very compelling. I can understand why she's having a good time. Her picture out of her window of the boat was very, very beautiful. So. Anyway, we're going to start. I'm really excited about today's meeting because we've got a lot of different ideas, and I happen to like to look at a lot of different ideas, a lot of reports, and a number of people coming to speak to us. So we're going to start off with my colleague, Representative Barbara Smith Warner, and she's going to give us a little information about the Summer Learning Work Group, and if you can... have a seat and tell us what you did this summer.
Well played, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colleagues, for the record, my name is Barbara Smith Warner, and I represent House District 45 in Northeast Portland, Maywood Park, and Park Rose. And I'm just here to give you a little briefing on, indeed, one of the things that I have been doing this summer, which is working in a summer learning work group. I'd like to first recognize Representative Hack, who also served with me on that, and some of our other colleagues, including Senator Roblin, Representative Doherty, also attended a few of those meetings. But I just to give you a briefing, I think all of us agree, you're on this committee, I've got kids in school. Education is a huge priority for us and perhaps one of the most important things that we do in this building and in our society. However, despite the fact how much we talk about how important education is, like structurally as a society, we only have kids do it 9 months out of the year. And we tell them, if you think about most skills, when you, like, whether you're an athlete or whatever it is, usually you work on those skills year round. You do it regularly in an ongoing manner. Yet somehow societally in the U.S., we only have our kids, we say it's the most important thing you do, but we're only going to have you do it 9 months out of the year. And one of what happens when you have that 3 month or longer chunk of time off every year is something called summer slide. And summer slide, I think people have talked about it anecdotally for a long time, but there is more and more research demonstrating the loss of learning and the actual that happens in those summer chunks, particularly among low income kids. There is a significant achievement gap that is exacerbated by that summer slide. Because I think we all think about what we did as kids during the summer, and those of you who are parents, maybe what you had your kids do during the summer, which is maybe when you were a kid, you spent a lot of time outside. Maybe you went to sleepaway camp. Your kids, maybe you sent them to, you know, to a sports camp or to a science something camp. That is what we think of when we think of what you do with your kids in the summer. It may be a child care issue, but it is also, you make it a point to have it be an enrichment opportunity for them. The low-income kids that we are talking about here, they are not living that fantasy. We are talking kids who they have parents who often work more than one job. If they either don't have childcare or these kids are providing childcare for their younger siblings, and the kids themselves are spending most of their time, if anything, in front of a TV or in front of a computer. And that is not, they are not having the idyllic childhood summer that we think of when we look back at that. And it is impacting their learning significantly. Kids are learning at whether they're low income or moderate, high income, they're learning at the same rates during the school year. It is that summer period where they are not getting exposure to the kind of enrichment things that middle income and higher kids are getting that exacerbates that summer slide and that achievement gap significantly. So I really believe that we cannot fully address that achievement gap until we deal with that summer slide issue. So that's where how one the main way that I got to this, you know, what can we do to promote summer learning? There have been a variety of, I came to you guys about an official work group during the short session that kind of died in the end of session. And so I thought, well, you know what happens around the legislature, which is if you want something to happen, sometimes you just put together a work group yourself and move forward. So that is what we did with the blessing of Chair Doherty. It's very helpful. We were inspired by the success of CTE, Career Technical Education, to call out Rep. Reardon and many other colleagues, about the way that they were able to start small and expand and say, this is something we want to draw more attention to. So what can we do to draw more attention to the issue of summer learning? Let's start small and establish over the long run something that can be counted on that we can really use to change the way that we think about this and work on it. So you will all see in the next legislative session in 2017 a pilot project proposal. We are still working on the elements. We just had another meeting of the work group yesterday. But the couple things I just want to call out to you to look for that are priorities for all of us who have been working on this issue are, number one, that this pilot project to provide summer learning opportunities, it will require a community partner. And this is something that I've talked about with many of you, whether it's the Rogue Valley Boys and Girls Club or the library in Lebanon. Communities are doing a lot of this work themselves, and we need to take advantage of those trust relationships that are established between those school districts and the schools and the groups in that community. So the key element number one is that these programs, the pilot projects that we're going to fund, are going to require a community partner to implement these summer learning projects. Number two, that they will have a nutrition element, because that is critical. Just to provide nutrition, almost 80% of kids who are on free and reduced lunch lose access to those meals during the summer. And so we figure it's another way to reinforce that. And realistically, you know, you can't learn if you're hungry. Food insecurity has a huge impact on kids' ability to learn. So we figure element number two is they will have a nutrition element as part of them. Number three is transportation. Even in urban areas, but particularly in rural areas, transportation is a huge barrier to getting kids to summer learning opportunities, to all opportunities, really. There's work groups right now on school transit, and we did do a smaller pilot on summer learning 2 years ago, and that was one of the strongest pieces of feedback that we got, was please let us use some of this funding for transporting these kids, because if we can't get them there, they're not going to get there, and they're not going to be able to take advantage of this. We're going to structure this as a non-competitive grant is the description. We're using the ready-to-read model are implemented by the state library, the idea that we will kind of set up the strictures of who qualifies for it, and then we will do outreach and set it up so that we don't run into the problem that we all hear, I'm sure, from all of our districts about, again, smaller districts, poorer districts being disadvantaged because they don't have somebody who can write grant applications. So the idea is we will set this up as a non-competitive grant. There will be some parameters, but if you qualify, you get it. And then finally, and it's hard to say most importantly, but I'll say most importantly, our focus is fun. We do not want summer school, summer learning to be seen as a punishment. We want this to be seen as an opportunity, both as the kids, you know, you got to have the kids. The kids vote with their feet, as somebody said in a meeting the other day. They will show up if you make it fun and meaningful for them. And if you do that, they will learn. They will be enriched. They will, you know, it will make a difference in how these kids think about learning and have these opportunities. So we want this to be something that all kids want to be a part of. So as I said, look forward in your inboxes, and I'm sure I'll be talking to you again before then about this pilot project on summer learning that we will be introducing next year with the hopes of moving forward on. And I'm happy to take any softball questions.
She only wants softball questions.
Yes.
So should I call on you or not?
Easy question, always.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Rep. Smith Warner for your hard work on this. And seriously, it's really close to my heart, because I think back in the 90s when my my kids had all sorts of opportunities through the David Douglas School District, whether it be sports or art or whatever. So we've got a long ways to go. So thank you for working on it. Would you be, so the softball question, would you be expanding existing programs? So maybe a one-week program into a four? Would that fit your criteria?
That's another thing. Thank you for the question, Mr. Chair. That is something that has come up in the conversations. And the idea is, yes, this is not, we're not asking people to create programs for program's sake. It's if you're in this qualifying area of the age range and the income range, and if you have something, you can use this to expand it as long as you have the community partner, the nutrition element, you know, the ability to use transportation, you know, to use part of the funding for transportation. Yes.
I got two.
Good.
Is he done? Are you done?
That's it. Okay. Representative Pat.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to say thank you, too, for stepping up to the plate and making this a priority. We talked a lot about it, but we needed a champion. So I just wanted to say thank you, and I've enjoyed the opportunity to be a part of that. One of the things I wanted to just kind of add to is while this won't be competitive, there are going to be measures that we expect folks to reach. They will have to provide a narrative explaining why the program is important, what the impacts are that they're going to have, how they're going to measure their successes. But ultimately, again, like the representative said, it has to be fun. And so we want to see how they're going to put a program together in a way that can be successful and measured, but yet maintain the component of fun. So there will be some accountability there, and there'll be some criteria as time goes. And then so long as they meet their goals, then we hope to be able to continue to fund that. So, and the transportation piece was very, very critical and very true. But again, thank you for all that you've done.
Thank you, and you're welcome. Yeah, I've used as an example when I was a kid for a couple years in middle school, there was, in our school district, there was a summer theater program that any kid could come to. And basically it was, and I can't even remember, it was 6 or 8 weeks where they would put on a play. So everybody came, you would audition, everybody got a part, you made the costumes, you built the sets, you painted the backdrops, you did rehearsals, and then you put on the play at the end of that period of time. And the things, I mean, imagine that as, I mean, the reading, the group interaction, the physical skills, all of that. That's kind of my ideal of, not that they all have to be theater camps, although I'm happy to sing a few songs from any of those shows that I was in anytime you ask.
I have some video already. Dances, too.
But that's the kind, I do dance also, it is true. But that is the kind of, you know, fun. It is truly meaningful. It is true, you know, it is true. Truly substantive, and it's fun. So,
thank you. And was the play?
Little Mary Sunshine and Once Upon a Mattress.
Excellent.
She can sing. I have heard her. Yeah. She can sing.
I understand that.
I'm no Lou Frederick, but.
Gracious. Because that was my major was theater. So. That was.
Oh, and Little Abner. Sorry. I did it 3 years. That's right.
Wow, very
and
cool.
Little Abner. Yeah.
Very cool. Thank you very much, and thanks for this effort. It really does make a huge difference. It's not, and the fun part has got to be at the top of the list, because that's exactly what we need to have. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
We had a group of folks come in from somewhere who would like to tell us who they are and where you're from.
Chair.
Yes.
If I may,
if you please,
I'd like
go ahead.
To do that. These are a group of friends of mine from the Grants Pass area. They're homeschoolers, and they're up checking out the Capitol and what we do here.
And have they figured that out yet?
Not yet, but as soon as they do, they promise to tell us.
Good. Yeah. Appreciate that. Yeah. Welcome to your Capitol. I hope you enjoy yourselves. Thank you very much. And so we'll close that. This is an open informational hearing. Close that and go into a closed informational hearing. I'm not sure the difference, but okay, you must know.
Just got to whack it up.
Oh, I see. I'm open and closed, yes. Open. Now we're going to open an informational hearing on the task force on class size, and we have our colleague, Susan McLean.
Is it okay if I just present from up
Certainly
here?
Can.
Okay, thank you. Well, I want to thank the chair and also Representative Doherty for agreeing to put this on the agenda. We are in the middle of our work, and we're not completely finished with the report that we're going to be sending both to the committee members and also to others before we get it to the legislature. But I do want to tell you just a little bit about what we've done. We were not seated until the very, very end of July, and so we've had to put an awful lot of work in a very short period of time. And we have met four times in August and in early September here, and we've been working on a group of folks to be, have a nice variety of people who have been involved with education, with our schools, who have been teachers, who have been aides, who have been principals, superintendents, parents, grandparents, but different folks and how they look at class size. And some of the items that we've come up with after looking at over 20 reports that are more of the academic reports, some of them are older, when class size was only possibly 25 or 22 at the high school level, and maybe even 19 or 20 at some of the elementary or kindergarten area levels. And we found that when you're talking about what affects teaching and what affects learning, that they're all interrelated. And so some of the actual findings that we've been working on is what are those interrelated types of items that are actually affected by class size. And I want to read a couple of them to you because they're ones that we've heard before, we've seen reports on, they're relating to other areas of concerns that we have with our schools and places where we think we need to support our teachers, our students, and our schools better. And some of those factors that impact it are impacted by class size are relationships with the teachers and with other students in the classroom. Also the feedback loop, how often the teacher or the instructor is able to give one-on-one feedback to students, or how they're able to relate to different learning styles and have different tactics and techniques that affect different type of learners in the most possible and the best possible way. Items of safety and space. Just the idea that in a learning setting, sometimes there can be so many students in the classroom and so little space for them to be able to really be creative and expansive in their best way of learning and listening and relating to the other students around them. The ability to adapt to individualized student needs. Sometimes you hear of those as IEPs, but you also just different styles of learning. And we can see that the amount of students in the classroom as well as the space provided in the classroom really seems to have some impact. Student achievement. And student achievement is, I'm only going to say two things about that, although it's very layered as far as some of the issues, but talking about the potential of experience. As we were just listening to, let's make teaching and learning fun, and let's make sure we have a variety of experiences to enrich the learning atmosphere and also the different types of styles of activities in the summer. Well, that should be happening in the classroom as well. And sometimes with class size and with the space available, that's not always a potential or possible. We also went on and we listened and heard a lot of details. We had over, I think there were between 10 and 15 different people who presented to our committee, and they talked about their own personal experiences, either as a parent or personal experiences as a teacher or someone who was actually in charge of the classroom, like a superintendent or a principal, and some of the possibilities they had because of the size of the classes that they were being asked to actually staff and be able to actually give support to in different ways because there were too many for one teacher to be able to deal with. So they were looking for specialists or they were looking for aides to come in and help in different ways. And we found that there were many portions of those schools in our state that do not have the aides or the counselors available to be the kind of assistance that some of the teachers need because of the size of the classes. There were other issues that we have dealt with that we are really relating to in this study or task force. One of them is the chronic absenteeism. We had testimony and we had some studies that indicated that a lot of time you will find students who don't come to class because either they don't feel comfortable or they don't feel like they're getting enough attention, or they don't feel like they're getting enough support. And again, this seems to relate back to the size of the class. Graduation rates. We know we want to continue to improve graduation rates. And yet, when you start looking at the different sizes of classes over the years, from the 80s to the 90s to 2000, you will find some correlation between, again, the size of classes and some of the opportunities, some of the enrichment, and also some of the results that we can get with student achievement. And then test scores. There's another issue that we talked a little bit about, test scores and technology and some of the other elements that are in the classrooms these days that we have to deal with that has impact from, again, the size of classes. The folks that were on this committee, and there was a wide variety, there were legislators like myself, and we had Senator Roblin and Representative Hack and Senator Bert Sugar and others who were there for part of the times and called in part of the time. We had folks, teachers from all around the state. We had the president of the Oregon Parent Teacher Association. We had Department of Education researcher that was there, board chair from the Beaverton School District, superintendent from the Cascade School District, president of the Oregon Education Association, and the executive director of a Salem-Keizer Education Foundation. So there was a wide variety of folks from the world of education and a wide variety of folks that really care about increasing and improving education in the state of Oregon. Our wonderful administrator, and that's the one sitting right over there, Richard, is working along with other staff to complete the report. We don't believe that we have recommendations for legislation at this point, but we do believe that we want to give the committee and the work an opportunity to continue to work, and we can work all the way through the 31st of December. And so many folks on the committee have agreed to continue to meet, and we will try to give a beginning report, and then we'll try to have a complete report that will get to the legislature and give them some opportunities to really look at different ways that we can improve education again. I do want to mention something that's too long for this meeting, but we tried to talk about class size as it was related to the quality education model, which we have agreed to in this state as being the model that would bring the type of education that we want and desire and our students really deserve. There are many issues about why that quality education model has not been completed or finished or given enough resources to be utilized in the way that we visualize the best education to be delivered to the classroom, to the different students, and in different types of curriculum. And so we will be working again in this report and as we continue to meet on trying to talk about that quality education model as it relates to class size and as it relates to the 8 or 9 different factors that are definitely affected by class size as we bring those suggestions to you. So I thank you for the time today, Mr. Chair, and I'm happy to answer any questions, but again, our report is not finished at this point.
Well, thank you. Are there any questions? Yes.
Representative Rudin. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. McClain, when you're doing your work, are you looking at the impact of class sizes and then relating that to the different subjects being taught and perhaps grade level mm-hmm. and that sort of thing? So it might be more of an issue with, in Woodshop, it's a big issue, class mm-hmm. size versus maybe PE, not so much. Just mm-hmm.
I appreciate that question because we do have data and we have reports and we've also had discussion on the fact that looking at early the importance of the smaller class sizes, especially with the smaller students, you know, from preschool to third grade, there's some elements that show that there's some differences in the size of those classes and why we might need a smaller class size. But you bring up another important issue. We looked also at blended classes and the fact that when you have an instructor that's dealing with a very wide level of the abilities because it's spanning third and fourth grade or it's spanning first and second grade, some of those blended classes and some of that information is also important. And then talking about curriculum, whether you're talking about band or you're talking about PE or you're talking about wood shop or you're talking about English or you're talking about an advanced math class, we talked about what was happening with our recognition of class size because we were using averages. That there were many times where we were looking at the average of the class. And just recently have we actually been collecting, in fact, just within the last 18 months to 2 years, the actual number of students in every class and how we can use that data. So it's very complicated in the sense that we really do have to look at differences in age, differences in curriculum, differences in combination of students and size and space. And there's no easy answer. But there has to be a recognition that it's affecting the things we care the most about: relationships, results on tests, feedback loops, safety. All of those things are things we care about in our classrooms with our students and our activities with our students. And so we have to acknowledge, first of all, that class size is affected and is affecting different factors on what we know to be the quality education model that we're trying to achieve. Did that answer?
You even gave me credit for things I didn't ask. So great.
Okay.
Thank you. Any other questions? I want to thank you for doing this and being part of this. It will, I think, add to a great deal of information that we need in the state, not just the quality education model, but we've had this rather constant mantra about class size not being important or being important, and this will help a great deal. So thank you very much for that.
I'd just like to tell her thank you as well, because she's done a really good job of pulling people together with not a lot of time. And so I just wanted to say thanks for the work you've done, too.
Thank you.
You've done a great job.
Thank you. This says close, so that means I can close this one, right? Okay. I'm going to close the informational meeting on...
Jump in.
Yes.
No. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yes.
So,
thank you for being here again.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm jumping in because it is September, and so my office, the Office of the Legislative Policy and Research Office, formerly Office of Committee Services, every September we publish our background briefs. So if, for example, you're not 100% up to date on the quality education model, you'll find on the dais a short packet that gives you a brief about the quality education model. There is also a list of all the other background briefs that are available. They're available to members. They're available to the public. They're under the publications page on the website. They include tens of topics: disability services, public health in a variety of ways, public transit, recycling and waste, all kinds of things. So if anybody needs to brush up, maybe before something that's going on in November, maybe you guys have something going on, go ahead, and these are great factual resources that my office publishes, so please take a look.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's good. And we move on to something else here. We now have a new executive director for the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, and she happens to be with us right now, too. So, Monica Beam, we're going to open the informational hearing on the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Representative Frederick, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dr. Monica Ann Bean, and I'm the Executive Director of the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission for the State of Oregon. I am here today after an informal meeting with Representative Doherty, who is not here today, and she is on a boat, and I'm very jealous of that. But after our conversation, she asked if I would like the opportunity to be before you today to meet the committee, and I said, absolutely, I would love that opportunity. In fact, I have reached out to your office staff so that I could have an informal meeting with each of you as well, and some of those have already occurred. So thank you for taking the time to meet with me. When I talked with Mr. Donovan, I asked about the protocol for what really this session was about, and it really is just a chance for you to meet me and know that you have my assurance that our team at TSPC is not making excuses anymore. I have reviewed the video recordings from prior sessions. I love the fact that they're recorded. I also know that if you sit in the third row about medium size over, you don't get on the screen. So that's why I chose that seat. So I am an educator and a lifelong learner. So I just want to let you know that I take very seriously the charge that's been given to me, and it is an opportunity to really make a difference for the students, even though not all are in public schools, but for their success. And that all comes down to what we do as an agency to, one, attract and recruit those educators, prepare those educators, and then support and retain them throughout their career so that they don't leave the state and don't leave the profession. We can't elevate the profession if we can't get them licensed. So I do recognize that there are areas that need to be improved. I will be speaking tomorrow to Senate Education in response to the audit from the House bill from last year. And I just really would like to let you know that I'm listening. I'm listening to educators. I'm listening to students. My neighbor found out where I worked, and she said, I said, let's talk. Let's listen. What are some of the things? So there are some ideas that hopefully you will consider moving forward to support educators in the state. And by educators, I don't just mean teachers. I mean everyone who's involved with the education process. So we have our State Teacher of the Year back behind me there, sitting beside me, and I was so excited to work with the Network for National Board Certified Teachers Saturday in Portland. That opportunity to be invited to collaborate with those thought partners, wow, I was... That's what this job's about. It's about listening to the educators and their voice and then making sure that the standards reflect that the programs that prepare future educators reflect that passion so that we don't lose this profession and have the shortage issues that other states face. With that being said, I just turn it over to any questions that you have for me or any conversation you would like to add. Thank you, Chair.
Well, it's absolutely refreshing to see you here and to meet you, and I see your energy and your excitement, and that excites me. For me, I think the two most important things that you mentioned were support and retention. Well, that and you're actually talking to and working with educators. So I just wanted to say thank you and welcome, and again, it's an absolute delight to see you and your enthusiasm and your willingness to listen and to make things better. So welcome and thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Anyone else? Representative Reardon.
No, I think thank you for coming in and introducing yourself. I look forward to having a private conversation with you, and we'll save the hard questions for that.
Fantastic. Thank you. I look forward to that opportunity. That's my new word, and my team will tell you when they hear that word, now they're saying it, and they don't even realize it. So it's positive energy for everyone. So thank you. I look forward to that opportunity as well.
Anyone else? No? Thank you very much.
Yeah.
We'll have lots of conversations, I'm sure.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, and we'll close that informational hearing, and we get to go on to a very fine time here. We're going to open an informational hearing on the 2016 Oregon Teacher of the Year, and Heather Anderson. Welcome.
Thank you. If I can make the presentation right here.
Oh, right.
Thank you for having us here today. I'm Heather Anderson. I'm a National Board Certified Teacher. I'm the 2016 Oregon Teacher of the Year and a teacher in the Ben Lapine School District. And I brought with me my colleague, Michelle Oakes, who is the co-chair of the Governor's Council on Educator Advancement today, because we wanted to speak with you about the importance of having highly accomplished teachers in every classroom. So we are firm believers that it's the teacher that makes the difference in the classroom and not the curriculum. While the curriculum is important and we teach the curriculum, it's those relationships that we heard about and the love that the educators have for their classrooms that really inspire our teachers or our students to grow. And so you can see from this quote right here, they're limitless when students are in the hands of highly accomplished teachers year after year. We can just help those students to be more successful throughout schools. I'm going to tell you a little bit about my professional impact of becoming a highly accomplished teacher. I am a native Oregonian from Bend and grew up in Bend Lapine schools, went to Oregon State, then got my master's degree at George Fox, and finished and was 22, just turned 23 years old, and ready to have a classroom. That's a huge responsibility at 23 years old. And my husband and I ended up moving to Washington, D.C. So not only had I been prepared as an educator, but I was very young, and I moved to a big city from Bend. Big difference. So I ended up teaching in one of the highest poverty schools in the nation for my first 6 years of teaching, which we do see a lot of our new teachers, novice teachers, being put in these settings. I was fortunate enough that I was in a school that my principal believed in supporting the teachers and empowering us when a lot of these other actions were being taken in different places in the country. My school had a 10% achievement rate in reading in 2001 and was the first school to be taken over by the state of Maryland for No Child Left Behind. They took an opposite approach and hired 20 first-year teachers and mentored us, induction classes, ELL support. We worked till Wednesday, till 6:30, and we're paid for it. Worked in the summers, and we're paid. We did all of the things that the research was showing would impact us as teachers to help change the culture, the climate of that school, empower our students, and keep teachers in the classroom. So I worked there for 6 years. During that time, in my fourth year of teaching, 20 of us went through a process called National Board Certification. And during that process, I was changed as a teacher. I was taught how to be reflective, how to analyze my teaching, how to make effective decisions to impact my students, and what do you know, we turned the school around. In 6 years, we had gone from 10% up to 50, 65, 85% by the fifth year of teaching there, because it takes time, it takes commitment. We have to stay in the same place with the same people for a while. I went back to visit my school now, who is now named after that administrator. They're in the 90% success rate still. 15 years down the road, they still believe in that model of supporting and nurturing the teachers to help empower the students. And I believe that National Board Certification was a turning point in empowering us through that process.
Hello, my name is Michelle Oakes. Today I am Heather's plus one. I'm a National Board Certified Teacher, Early Childhood Generalist, and my journey into National Board began in 1999 when a colleague and friend of mine looked at me and said, hey, let's do this National Board thing. And we didn't know what it was at the time, but we knew that we needed to further our craft of teaching. We needed to grow as educators, but we also knew we didn't want to become administrators. And so what could we do to grow professionally? And so we ended up pursuing this thing, National Board Certification, and dug deeply into accomplished teaching, looking at National Board standards, the architecture of accomplished teaching, the five core propositions, and I ended up certifying in 2000. I recertified in 2010. The National Board process and experience is like no other professional learning opportunity. The reflection, the collaboration, and what you do. So my thinking has changed. Every day I am reflective. Every day I teach with intentionality. And that's because of the National Board process.
So I moved back to Oregon 9 years ago, back home to Bend, which is a wonderful move. But when I came back to town, I met a few other people that were board certified, my colleague included. Oregon is lagging in this area. We have about 300 board certified teachers in our entire state. And if you look just to the north, we have 17,500. They're expecting to get 18,000 board certified teachers by next year. They support their board certified teachers by incentives. They have support and professional development that is ongoing for teachers going through this process. So we would like to talk to you a little bit about how we could positively impact Oregon with highly accomplished teaching. Board certification is based on some pretty simple principles. There's five core propositions. Teachers are committed to students and their learning. Teachers know the subjects they teach and how to teach those subjects to students, so the developmental appropriateness. Teachers are responsible for managing and monitoring student learning. Teachers think systematically about their practice, and they learn from that experience. They're reflective. And teachers are members of learning community. Hopefully, when you look at this list, you think, this is what I want in every teacher, in every school, for my child, for every child in Oregon, because the more that we can have highly accomplished teachers in the school, the more that we can. If you were to think about a profession that's highly regarded, say, a doctor, you could look through here and see that for doctors, we don't just jump right into the profession. We have carefully planned pre-preparation, then we have preparation, then induction, such as residencies, and then throughout professional practice, continued professional development to stay at the highest in the profession. We could have the same thing with our teachers. Right now, we're in a nice shifting area where we're looking at education through a model, looking at it through an entire continuum. Our pre-service teachers, what do they need to be successful? Following that with the same language with novice teachers, what supports can we have through mentorship or induction or what we know as research shows works for novice teachers? And then continuing to support our teachers with professional development as they become professional teachers or go through the board certified process to become teacher leaders.
National Board is the body of accomplished teaching. It's the core body of accomplished teaching. And in the state of Washington, research has shown that board certified teachers produce up to 1.5 months of additional learning for students in National Board certified teachers' classrooms. And it can even go to 2 months in English language arts and math classrooms. In the state of Florida, the students of board-certified teachers actually scored higher than the students of non-board-certified teachers in specific subject areas. And this research has been proven in 2004, 2007, 2008, 2015. So it's shown over time to still hold true that accomplished teaching is strong teaching. We all know that students with the most need the strongest teachers in front of them. And National Board teachers show a positive impact on minority and low-income students. And also, in Chicago and Kentucky, the board certification is a signal of teacher quality. When we think about teacher effectiveness, what does that look like and sound like? It's a National Board certified teacher.
And within the handouts that we provided for you, there's a link of about 20 other research articles if you are interested. There's been a lot of research done over time on it, which is one reason that it is an effective practice. But
Once board certified, you are accomplished forever. For instance, what I learned in 2000, I still use today. And the return on its investment is significant. We talked about recruitment earlier. Imagine if we started with clinical practice in universities and went into K-12 institutions and we had consistent language, how supportive that would be for your novice teacher. Thinking about retention, that veteran teachers want meaningful, ongoing professional learning that helps them fine-tune their craft, and we want to stay in the profession. And then I mentioned career pathways. How do we keep strong, accomplished teachers in the classroom? Some will obviously go into administration, but we also want strong school and district leaders in our classrooms. And then advocacy. Most National Board certified teachers are advocates, and we think differently, and we have doors that open to us that we never even knew existed, hence sitting here. And student achievement. It all goes back to the research. How do we improve student achievement? We actually have a National Board candidate who has not certified yet. She's gone through 1 year of working on her National Board components, and it has already impacted her instruction in a significant way. She has looked at the standards, she has reflected on her practice, and she decided that her classroom learning environment needed to change to meet the needs of her students. So she became an advocate for what resources did she need to support her learning environment. And she was able to get different school classroom supplies for her classroom to create an open seating atmosphere. I was with her yesterday, and she said, "Oh my gosh, 10 days into school, and my students are able to be attentive learners for an hour already. That has never happened in the past." So by her simply going through the beginning stages of National Board Certification, she has been able to be an advocate and to boost student achievement.
And we have a lot of work going on in Oregon already. The Oregon Education Association supports a four-day jumpstart in three places in our state where trainers like Michelle and I help support candidates through the process. Though right now we have a lot of people, over half, driving down from Washington for those trainings. And so we would love to be supporting those jumpstarts for our Oregon teachers, as we will still support Washington, but we'd really like that to be a support for here in Oregon. We also have our professional advancement and support system model in Ben Lapine Schools, of which we are both on the committee of, that has realigned the way of thinking for payment for teachers, where we look at them as early career educators and giving them the support they need during those first 5 years of teaching, the professional teacher, and after they master, showing their impact on student learning, moving up to the master teacher, as opposed to just the typical steps and ladders that you see. And then many districts around the state are supporting compensation models. Over 50 have some type of national board support, whether they pay for the candidate to go through the training or offer them a small stipend afterwards. What we would love to see statewide is some implementation with full support of a jumpstart where we could reach more than just our three areas. We do know that in the rural settings, it's harder. So we are going to work on some online supports as well, being in Central Oregon. Sometimes we feel like we're in the rural area, so we want to make sure it's accessible for everyone in the state. And then we also, as a state, would love to see some form of candidate support throughout the year. And Ben Lapine and some our ESD helps support us so that we can meet with our candidates once a month. But it would be nice to have that support more readily available for any candidate that wanted it, as opposed to just
if it's available.
If it's available by it from, if you have advocates speaking for you to get it available. And then incentive funds. Teachers work hard, teachers love their job, but by showing that they're highly accomplished, to offer some form of stipend on the, for teachers that become National Board Certified would definitely be an incentive for people to go through this program and be able to impact students. And or reimbursements on their fees. They pay a set fee every 10 years to go through this process. And then the clinical partnerships as well. We've discussed with some universities how great it would be if we had cooperating teachers being these National Board Certified teachers mentoring the young pre-service teachers. And last weekend, we had an accomplished teacher institute at the Oregon Education Association, where all of these team members came together and discussed what we could do to improve highly accomplished teaching in the state of Oregon. And we came up with some priorities that I wanted to share with you, that we could start in those pre-service years with common language. I know that sounds probably basic, but if we're using the same language with our teachers in their preparation programs, through novice, through professional, through teacher leaders, that would be a big support, with a shared mission and vision, and having those board certified teachers support as cooperating teachers. Our novice teachers, statewide mentoring or induction courses, supporting the teachers in a common language. And then professional teachers, the incentive, again, cohort support models, recognizing being National Board on licensure and leadership opportunities, and encouraging our teachers to be teacher leaders, some form of recognition across the state, and the incentives and leadership opportunities. So we wanted to thank you for listening to us today. It's something we are passionate about and both believe in, and we've seen impact ourselves, our students, and teachers that we've worked with for 10 years through this process. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any questions, any comments?
I guess I have one.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being here, and thank you for taking the extra effort to work through this program for yourselves and for being advocates and ambassadors today. First of all, because it's new to me in some levels, who actually gets the money for each one of the five components? I think I read $475 per component. And how long does the certification last? And who judges and grades the work?
So it is a outside agency. So it's National Board for Professional Teaching Standards. $475. You have a 3-year period in which you can complete it now. And once you have certified, it's on a 5-year renewal cycle because they've looked at what states are doing with their licensure, and it's 5 years. So National Board has done that. So it's on a 5-year cycle. And who reviews it? Teachers. Mm-hmm. Teachers in your area who are highly trained in calibration, scoring, and removing bias.
And that's what I thought was important to kind of highlight, because a lot of times we're ending up with folks who come in and talk to us about for-profit corporations making, you know, the choices, watching videos on people that are even student candidates, and that those are responsibilities of just basic certification in the state of Oregon and other areas. So we want to make sure that we've got highly qualified teachers actually reviewing any work that's being done to supplement license programs in the state of Oregon, or whether they're to assist in giving more of those opportunities for support for our teachers. But I thank you for that. And I've got a website to look at now.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, good afternoon. Thanks for being here. I just have at one point, I think I heard that you didn't want your really good teachers to go into administration. And I understand that. I remember one of the best courses I took was called Success Without Promotion, you know, so that we have those anchors. Mm-hmm. But I have a real challenging time with the relationship between the teachers in my district and our district office. And I don't know if you have any thoughts about how we can build some of that collaboration, or again, maybe get one or two you teachers, you know, that want to be in the administration. So I don't know if it can even be considered a rhetorical question, but that is of concern to me.
I was going to say, and Ben, I can speak to what they do in Ben Lapine, is that they're very open in making sure when we have committees that we have teacher voice available on everything. And so, for example, with the PASS committee, it was there were 5 administrators and then 17 teacher voices. So we feel mm-hmm. that even though and we get asked to go into administration, but even though we feel that we're the teachers, we like our time with the kids.
I understand. Yep.
We can be the voice for the teachers that are going to affect the students. But then we also know, like, if you feel one of my teammates was feeling strongly we needed some better mental health curriculum. So she called and she went down and she started on a committee, and now we're doing Mind Up this year and she's running that. And mm-hmm. she just feels really empowered by, like, hey, they listened to me. We're going to try this. I'm going to pilot it. Mm-hmm. So they've just been really open to letting us be part of the decision making.
And I would add on and maybe add to my statement around strong teachers becoming the administrators. I want my administrator to be a strong educator.
Yeah.
But as an educator, I don't want that to be my sole career pathway. And that's mm-hmm. where I have to go in order to move up or do something different. And so I think thinking about also the state of Washington, they have so many National Board certified teachers right now that they have administrators and superintendents coming to them going, I need this training. I need to know what these NBCTs are doing
sure.
because they are now exceeding my expertise and knowledge.
And even better yet, they're becoming principals now. So they're mm-hmm. finding that Very they're cool. becoming stronger mm-hmm. administrators with this underlying understanding.
And it is stunning that Oregon has 300 and Washington has 17,000. It's just amazing. We must fix that.
Yeah.
All right. Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
And again, thank you for being here and sharing this. I had one similar question. Had to do with, is there actually a program such as this for specifically for administrators, so that they can kind of dovetail together and learn how to play together?
There was at one time. They had one for about 5 years, and it didn't take off as well as the teaching one did, so they don't have it anymore.
Follow-up? Not exactly follow-up, but another question. So Of all the people that enter this program, do you happen to know how many complete the program, or any feeling for that?
So that depends on the cohort support and the Jumpstart support, and that's exactly why we would love to see those available in the state. Without cohort support, it's around 20% achievement rate. In the last research that was done, but with I've been doing cohort support for 10 years now, and we have a range. I mean, we're well above 70%, usually around 80 or so. You do have a few that will drop out with life things that happen, but if they have that group to work through it with and people to support and encourage them, the achievement's higher.
Mm-hmm. And National Board practices what they preach, and so they have reflected, and every 10 years they go back and look at their process and look at what is it they're assessing. And right now they are in the end of a huge revamping of their program, and so it's been 3 years now that they get to do it. When we did it, we had to do it in one.
Okay. Cool. Did you say what you teach?
I am a fourth grade teacher, but this year I'm the interventionist for Juniper Elementary in Bend. Yeah.
And I was a primary teacher. I am now the mentor program coordinator for Bend Lapine Crook County Sisters High Desert ESD.
Okay, they're lucky to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? Well, I want to thank you as well. I am frankly a little disturbed about this because we began a process to talk about this board certification many, many years ago here in Oregon. The idea that we only have 300 is just extraordinary to me. I would love to know what it is that Washington has done to be able to encourage and support, and if that's supporting in a particular way, then we should be doing that. The incentives are important, but what are the appropriate incentives? We've had a lot of people try to believe that you pay people more, and that's the major incentive. I have yet to see a teacher who's wanted to teach because they wanted to know how much money they were going to make at the end of that day. It's really important to have a sense of why people would do this, why I did it, why my son teaches now. Those kinds of things, I would love to know more about that. And so if we can find out a way to get the information here, not just with this. I mean, it would be great to see, get an example of the kinds of things that you are learning as you become a certified teacher. Those are great phrases that we saw, but I'd like to know what it is exactly you do and why we have not been able to be successful, as successful as Washington. There's really no excuse. I mean, 15 years ago is when I was hearing about board certification. And we were concerned that we were only going to have two or three. We knew we were behind then. I didn't realize we were going to fall this far behind. So.
And I've been speaking with Representative Gene Wisnett, who's my representative, and he's helping to. He's been contacting the National Board and looking through this and seeing if we can offer some types of cohort support and things like that. So he's got some good ideas too.
Well, I like the fact that I mean, we know what works. Let's just try to put it into practice. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I'll close this informational hearing and open an informational hearing on Summer Transportation Institute at Portland State University. If you'd introduce yourselves for sure, and thank you for being here. And I think you have a slide show.
Yes, we do.
Slideshow.
Did you say slideshow?
It's slide.
I thought of something.
35 millimeter
slideshow.
So, Representative Frederick and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Howe Hagedorn, and I'm the Associate Director for the Transportation Research and Education Center at Portland State University. I'm going to refer to it as TREC for short, because in academia we like to have a lot of acronyms, and so we'll just carry that over. But before I hand it over to my esteemed colleague, Sarah Duger, I just wanted to provide some background on my organization.
Forward.
Okay. So TREC is the hub of transportation research and education at Portland State. We inform transportation decision-making through research. We also build the capacity of the transportation workforce and support the education of future transportation professionals through curriculum development and student participation in research. And we do this in through various programs, and you can see the logos up there. A couple of those programs are the U.S. Department of Transportation-funded National Center for Livability, also known as the National Institute for Transportation and Communities, as well as through our initiative for bicycle and pedestrian innovation. However, I'm here today to talk about another piece of our mission, and that is to help attract and engage K-12 students. We have funded over the past 10 years a variety of efforts to support K-12 programs, including the first is supporting the publication of the Big and Awesome Bridges of Portland and Vancouver book that was written by Sharon Wood Wortman. This book has made huge strides toward advancing the knowledge of transportation engineering among area elementary school children. And so this book has been incorporated into the Portland Public Schools third grade curriculum and placed in each of the third grade classrooms in Portland. Recently, the Vancouver Public Schools District has also placed the book in each elementary school library and are trying to incorporate that into the fourth grade curriculum. We've also worked with the Center for Science and Education at Portland State University to develop an instructional unit that we refer to as Investigations in Transportation. And this has provided students with a rich, engaging learning opportunities set in the context of real-world problem solving around a school parking lot dilemma. So basically, the Center for Science and Education worked with some local transportation professionals to help these kids figure out what transportation to solve around their school, and they decided that it would be looking at the parking lot because it creates a lot of transportation-related issues. And so that group worked with five different classrooms in the Chehalem and Tobias schools in Beaverton. And that curriculum applied science inquiry as well as engineering design and mathematical practices to transportation-related problems. Increasingly, though, our center is focusing on girls. Next slide. Girls are extremely important to the future of the transportation workforce. If you look at the workforce as a whole, women represent 47% of the total workforce in the U.S., but they make up less than 13% of transportation jobs. And these include urban and regional planners, civil engineers, architecture, surveying, and construction management. And so the graph you see there, this is just an example of a STEM-related career, and this is civil engineering. And what it shows is the number of employed civil engineers by gender. So the blue bar on the graph represents the number of men that comprise this industry sector, with the orange representing the number of women. And so as an example, my background is in civil engineering. So when I graduated from college in 1997, about 20 years ago, there were just under 10% of the graduates were women. 20 years later, the U.S. has added about 100,000 more civil engineers, and still we are at about 10%. So we're not doing a great job of attracting women to this career. So we need to do more to attract girls to STEM-related careers, and this is one area that offers huge opportunities for women. But how do we engage and attract girls to transportation careers? And so through our center, we've done that through a couple of working with a couple of local girls-focused organizations, such as Girls Inc., as well as Chick Tech, to provide opportunities to middle to high school girls to explore transportation topics. But these types of opportunities are a bit one-off, and they provide great exposure. But what we've tried to do through the Summer Transportation Institute is to provide a more empowering experience for girls to explore transportation careers. And so now I'm going to hand it over to Sarah to talk about, she was the director of our Summer Transportation Institute program, and so she'll talk about that experience in more detail.
Thank you, Hal. My name is Sarah Duger, for the record, and thanks so much for inviting us to come and explain a little bit about our program. So NSTI, the National Summer Transportation Institute, is a national program. It's funded through the Federal Highway Administration's Division of Civil Rights. And it's a workforce development program to get underrepresented minorities and girls interested in pursuing STEM-related coursework in high school and then post-secondary coursework to enter transportation fields. So it's a really downstream pipeline kind of model, right, of workforce development. So it's designed to get kids of color, poor kids, girls, and kids whose parents didn't attend college to get introduced to transportation in all its multifaceted complexity. This means there are NSTI programs around the country. So there are about almost 70 of these all around the country. And they are housed at, usually at universities or colleges that have some kind of outreach, pre-college outreach program about transportation or STEM for underrepresented kids. The cash is funneled through departments of transportation in each state. Oregon has hosted NSTI programs in the past at OSU and at Western. This year, PSU was, or TREC was awarded the grant with a proposal that foregrounded girls' experiences, girls' challenges, and connection to the industry and girls in the, women in the industry. Oops, sorry about that. Our goals were to provide experiential learning about transportation to support livable communities, to connect high school girls with women in transportation-related fields, and Portland happens to be kind of this mecca of women in transportation, both in the public and private sector, also one of the most progressive cities in the country. I'm not quite sure how those things are related, but I like to think that they are. And then also to attract young women from diverse backgrounds to transportation-related coursework, and basically introduce them to all the different kinds of jobs and ways into those jobs that they could take. So out of all of the institutes around the country, there are only two focused on girls and girls' experiences. Ours and one called Hard Hats and Heels, which I would suggest says that girls can study engineering and still maintain sort of culturally effective and acceptable forms of femininity rather than addressing and critiquing systemic sexism within the work and educational environments associated with the transportation sector, which still exists, as Hal already pointed out. So what did we do there? Let me actually talk about who came first. On your handouts, I've sort of described the range of schools that were represented. It was a 2-week day program. 22 girls started the program, all from around, you know, a 30-mile radius approximately of the Portland area. Both public and private high school students participated. It's a free program that supports transportation to and from and meals and everything like that. So, 20 kids finished. So that's pretty good retention rate. We worked with TREC's many professional partners, both in the private and public sectors, to develop programming each day that gave the girls opportunities not only to reflect about their own place within a larger complex system of the built environment, but also to reflect on their roles as citizens and future decision makers. So less than being kind of a pipeline-oriented workforce development program, it was a more of an open-ended program that suggested that transportation is a way in which you can work and live as a citizen and participate in your environment in a meaningful manner. Now, I wanted to just mention that in the larger picture, girls, and particularly girls of color, are not prioritized in any way by our current transportation system. Nobody asks girls what they want, what they need, anything. That's just how it is. The specific needs of girls are not considered in transportation planning, and rarely are they asked their opinions about such subjects. They're routinely targets, however, of harassment on the street and on public transportation, but rarely given the tools or advocacy that they need to operate within those public spaces. And furthermore, in the worst-case scenario, are told it's their own fault. Additionally, despite decades of attempts, girls still face significant barriers in their pursuit of STEM fields that would take them into engineering or planning careers. So as they grow older, their voices recede from the public debate about what makes for good transportation systems or good civic systems generally. So we need to stop asking why STEM needs girls, and we need to start asking why girls need STEM to make their communities more livable. So how did we do this? That's a big, kind of a tall order, really, for any kind of program. But the way that we worked through this was to, as I mentioned, have visitors from both public and private sectors come into our classrooms, including people at various levels of governmental decision making, and then also including people who brought in very technical projects to kind of sustain and encourage problem solving within the transportation context. And then in the afternoons, generally, we went on field trips. We went to the port. We went on a bike ride. We went to on the Orange Line to see about the new Tillicum Crossing. Who paid for this? Why does it look like this? How do you build a bridge? What does it take? We visited the TriMet headquarters. In addition to all of these projects, the girls took on two-week sustained projects, which working collaboratively in groups of three or five, they covered a bunch of different subjects. They covered harassment, gender-based harassment on public transportation. They explored the Tillicum Crossing through an informational presentation. They developed a website about the relationship between transportation systems and processes of gentrification and displacement in Portland. They created a project proposal. That's the thing up at the top. Sorry, it's a little hard to read. Project proposal for protected bike lanes on Southwest 4th Avenue in downtown Portland in order to provide a safer north-south bike route through the city. And they solved problems specific to suburban bus riders, too few covered bus stops and unsafe walking conditions, an exploration of how this problem disproportionately affects people in outer southeast Portland, where incomes are the lowest. And in that, they collaborated with some map makers from PBOT, which was pretty exciting for them. Now, what were the outcomes of something like this? From their evaluations of the programs, nearly all the girls experienced a significant increase in their self-reported knowledge, and they also were able to define words like equity, livable community, sustainability, that they had, at the beginning of the week, no idea what those words really had to do with transportation in particular, but with themselves specifically. Comments from the students reflected how these lessons resonated. One of my favorites is, I was very surprised to see that this program was going to be about more than just transportation modes and also included people. So when we talk about, again, how is STEM good for girls? When we ask them, well, part of the answer is people. Here are some maps that they made. A lot of what we did in the workshop at the very beginning were mapping on an interpersonal level, and then using sort of geography to explore identity. There are some girls working on a street count, counting cars on the street, using tools that transportation professionals use in their daily work to make policy recommendations. There they are on their bikes. They worked with professionals to understand things like the cross section of a street. When you look at a street and it only has a sidewalk on one side, what's happening there? Or if it has no place for a bike to go, or the bike lane just ends, what's happening there? They also had some visitors from ODOT who let them use a laser gun on 4th Avenue, and they did some speed corridor testing. And there they are at the Port of Portland. Really great cohort. There they are learning GIS in the computer lab with some graduate students from Portland State. And there they are. One kid said, I thought this camp was extraordinary. I loved it. I was unsure at the beginning. And let me just say, none of these kids signed up for a transportation camp of their own volition. They were all encouraged mightily by mentors, parents, and teachers. So as we did our outreach, and that's one thing that we learned a lot about this year, was we need to make closer ties with those folks, because that's who helps kids really see themselves, take that next step. I learned so much in a fun and interesting way, but especially the field trips, the bike tour, and Know Your City. Know Your City is an organization in Portland that does city history tours. My only suggestion is fewer sandwiches. Other than that, it's great. So how did this program turn out at the end? We learned a lot about the opportunities and also the limits of a program like this. It functions as an introduction to the field. It's not tied to a school or to a faculty of any kind, so the follow-up is challenging at best, because we're working with kids and their families to follow up with things like scholarship opportunities, et cetera. We would love this program to be long-term, to be relationship-based, and to function within the context of a school or schools. We know that public-private partnership is essential to the success of a program like this, because all of these professionals, there were 18, I think, who came over the course of 2 weeks, volunteered their time, which was incredibly valuable to us. And so we will be applying for this grant again next year, and hopefully will involve young people from Klamath Falls as well as Eugene to come up for an overnight version of the camp 1 week, and then we'll have a day camp for Portlanders for 1 week. So that's our plan now, and I'd like to invite any questions you have about the program or anything that we learned.
Representative McLean.
Well, I want to thank you for being here today. And I kept thinking, as you were talking, we were talking about transportation, you know, and I was thinking, you guys are probably thinking, well, why is this in education? But I think you saw the connections when she talked about STEM partnerships. And I was lucky enough to be able to go up and watch these young women as they were going through some of their all of their different experiences and exposures, and got to talk to a few of them. And again, it's that STEM connection, it's that private-public connection, it's that
career pathway connection where we need to help and make sure that all of our communities and all of our students are having an opportunity to see what the possibilities are out there if they're paying attention and working hard in their educational life. And it was lovely. And the projects that they made, the different ones that you talked about, whether it was dealing with the bridge or whether it was dealing with mass transit and some of the social issues on mass transit, they really did pick some things that they were personally interested in and then were able to apply their experiences, their life, their background, and some of the new things that they had learned from the experts in the field. So, again, I just thought as a K-12, watching some K-12 students deal with college and with a variety of information, that it was pretty thrilling and pretty exciting. And it was here to just be something to spike your interest to want to come up and see more about the institution of transportation and some of the students that are exposed and experiencing it.
Good. Any other questions? No?
Well, I'm looking forward to maybe, I didn't get a chance to get over there this summer. I would love to get a chance to see what you folks are doing. Mm-hmm. It sounds really interesting, and to see what kind of ideas they come up with. So I appreciate that. Thank you very much for presenting this.
Thank you for your time.
Sure. Okay, I'm going to close the informational hearing on the Summer Transportation Institute at Portland State and open an informational hearing on STEM, CTE, and graduation rates. Nothing we've ever talked about before in this committee. So would you, I have four different people I have scheduled to come up.
Good afternoon. My name is Dave Valenzuela. I'm the superintendent for Three Rivers School District, located in southwest Oregon, Josephine County. I was a student at Three Rivers School District, attended all 12 years with Three Rivers, worked in their maintenance department, taught there, was a building principal, and am a parent of a Three Rivers student, and now the superintendent. And so on behalf of our families and community and students that we serve, I thank you for the time this afternoon that you've afforded us to speak on one of the many important things that we do down at Three Rivers. I'm going to introduce Casey Alderson in a minute. He's the Director of Secondary Education and oversees our CTE program for our high school students. And he's going to paint a picture of our rural district and some pretty amazing things that happen as a result of the CTE programs that we've developed over the years and the things that we do for our students in CTE and STEM-related activities. And as you see those things and the illustration that he'll provide you, I would ask that you consider the ongoing working relationship that we have with the Department of Ed, with TSPC, which is really exciting to hear about the energy that's in TSPC's leadership now, and those career pathways that are sometimes difficult for our teachers in rural districts to pursue to enhance our CTE programs, to provide new opportunities for programs of study in CTE, and would otherwise prevent some of the great things that Casey's going to talk about today. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. For the record, committee, my name is Casey Alderson. Like Dave said, Director of Secondary Ed and alternative education, extracurricular activities, transportation, and today speaking on CTE. So I appreciate the time that you guys are taking out of your schedules to kind of listen to what we're doing down in Southern Oregon and kind of take a look at some things that we think are some bright spots and then some things that we kind of need some support on from your level. So looking some of the graduation rates, one of the things that we're talking about today is getting kids to graduate. We want every kid that comes into our system to walk across that stage after 12, 13 years. And we believe that STEM and CTE is one of those hooks that we can get into students that keeps them around. We talk about the fun in education. And to me, the STEM and the CTE piece, that's the fun part of school for kids. And the earlier we can get that hook in them, the longer they're going to stick around in our system and ultimately become a graduate and get hooked enough that they go on to post-secondary. And that's our ultimate goal, is getting them into the high-wage, high-demand jobs in our region, and specifically in Josephine County, and helping change the culture in Josephine County to one that is centered around education and higher education, and changing the economy in Josephine County. So looking at some of the numbers for our CTE concentrators, 15.5 points more likely to graduate than students statewide. So that's something that we celebrate. We know that once we get our students into our CTE programs, they're likely to graduate, and they're graduating at a rate that's higher than the average student in our district. So for us, we're looking at ways that we can always expand our CTE offerings to help pull in more students. Our main area in CTE is manufacturing in Josephine County. It's the one program that all of our schools in our district, as well as our neighboring district, have in common. And it's something that we think is a high-wage, high-demand job that will ultimately help change the economy in our area, too. So looking through here, PowerPoint's a little different than mine, but the CTE revitalization grant that was released 2 years ago for application, we were a part of that with Grants Pass School District and Medford School District, and it's around manufacturing and getting students into the manufacturing route. We have a mobile lab that's going from school to school, allowing students that wouldn't traditionally be exposed to those types of offerings, giving them the opportunity to see that in action. And it's at the middle schools. We're hitting the middle schools in our district, as well as Grants Pass School District and Medford School District as well.
That's their PowerPoint.
Their piece?
Yeah.
Okay. That's all right.
Sorry about that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think we're just going to get the right PowerPoint slide. Right.
I was going to say,
the slideshow. Okay. Got the one pulled up, and they're trying to get it all sorted out. That.
Thank you.
Is this yours?
No, it's on that. Mine are on that drive. The rest are not on that drive. It's the best one.
Oh, yeah. So I need to put.
All right.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Back in.
Sorry. I need to reboot my phone.
So I'm going to take this opportunity to remind everybody who comes before committees, we like 24-hour submission time before presentations. Not that anybody in particular offended in this committee, but 24 hours helps us avoid, you know, situations like this where committee staff feels dumb.
Chair.
Yes.
Like all radio guys do when faced with dead air, I'd like to step in and fill it for a moment.
Just can't handle it, can you?
Can't. The silence is.
Don't feel it's necessary.
The silence is a killer. But I do want to thank my friends for coming up today. Really appreciate the opportunity that you're giving us to hear what's going on. So, again, thank you very much for coming up today and what you do.
Well, we appreciate it as well.
We appreciate the time. So it's fine. I can go through.
You were
this.
Mentioning manufacturing. What industry are you talking about in Three Rivers or around in the area that you're talking about?
So right now we're looking at more of the metals, so the CNC machines right now. We've got one in each of our buildings. We're actually looking at purchasing one right now in our middle school, and helping bridge the connection between our middle schools and high school CTE program of study. Mm-hmm. And so we're hoping to, like we said earlier, get that hook in them earlier. So then when they get to the high school, they're ready and prepared to be able to move on to some higher level of manufacturing.
Good.
So
you have one middle school or two?
So we have, our district has 8 elementary schools, 3 middle schools, and then 3 main high schools. So,
Chair, I might mention that Representative Stark, who's in attendance, is a graduate of that particular school district, and so he's very typical of the fine product that they put out.
There you go.
Yes.
So he could tell us all about that CNC machine, right?
be excited to get him on the machine. So I'll forget this piece here. So talking about some of the CTE programs that we have, another one of our flagships is our FBLA program. Our FBLA program at Hidden Valley High School is 15 years in a row. We have been state champs. And so we pride ourselves on that, and we know that that's giving kids the skills to succeed beyond high school. And whatever route they go, that's going to get them into a path or give them the skills to get into a pathway that they're going to be successful when they get there. So the FBLA program, this last year we had 9 first place trophies and 38 top 10 finishers. So that's something that when you're looking at a school of about 550 students, that's a pretty big accomplishment. And we're going against some schools that are significantly larger than we are. And to be able to get kids in that route, thinking about you know, being a leader in their amongst their peers and leaders in schools and outside in the community and doing projects that benefit the community, that's something that we really pride ourselves on and kind of hold them up, hopefully across the state, that they're doing good things. And we want that to continue. Some of the other CTE programs that we have going on, we're you know, we've talked a little bit about the summer, you know, the importance of summer school and keeping kids engaged in education beyond just the 9 months. This last year, we partnered with Rogue Community College to develop a summer STEM academy, and so we're in 3 different valleys in Josephine County, and we were able to offer some programs for students that crossed all boundaries. And so we opened it up to Southern Oregon. We had students from as far away as Ashland, which is about 45 minutes away. They drove over 4 days a week for 2 weeks to be a part of our automotive program out in the Illinois Valley. It's one of the few automotive programs around, especially in Southern Oregon. And we had students from Ashland driving all the way over so they could be a part of that program. And so we opened it up with Rogue Community College, and they're across Jackson and Josephine County. And it's something that we hope to be able to sustain beyond just this last year and to kind of build on that so we can continue that education beyond that 9-month scope. And we know that kids are excited about CTE and about the STEM programs that are available. And with the ever-changing technologies, it's something that we need to do as a school to make sure that they're current on that stuff. So this last year we had programs the CTE programs, Summer STEM Academy in programming, the CNC machinery, drones, coding, science exploration, construction, agriculture is a big product in Josephine County, graphic design and robotics. And so the age groups range from everything from 6th grade up to 12th grade students coming to these Summer STEM Academies. So it was fun to see high school seniors working with incoming 6th graders in the same room learning this technology and being able to teach each other these skills, which is important. Important skill as they go through the classrooms. Another one of our highlights from Three Rivers, we've put in a lot of work with Rogue Community College and articulating our coursework down there at our high school so that students are able to earn college credit, and not just earn college credit, but earn it for free. RCC's put a big emphasis on helping change the community, and that's one way that we're able to do that. This last year, Three Rivers High School students received 2,200 college credits, which was the highest in our region. And it saved our students approximately $200,000. And so when you look at the cost of higher education, we have students that are able to graduate high school and be able to walk onto a college campus as a junior. And that's something that, with the work of the community colleges and higher ed, that's a commitment on their part. And we appreciate that they've kind of cleared the barriers there and are willing to work with the local high schools to develop that partnership. So here's sort of highlighting Three Rivers, the college now credits. And so 2 of our high schools, highest in the region as a district, we were the highest in the region. Our students at Illinois Valley High School out in Cave Junction, Selma area, they're graduating or they're earning about 3 credits per student at the high school. And so in a school of about 330 students. That's a pretty big accomplishment and a dedication to making that bridge to higher education, which we want. Some of the challenges that we face, like Dave said, we heard a little bit earlier from TSPC, but looking at teacher licensure relating to CTE, we have teachers that have a passion in these fields, and sometimes the licensure piece can get in the way of that. We want to do everything that we can as district level administrators to try to clear that path and do whatever we can to help ignite that passion, not only in them, but in turn in their students. And we know that when there's passion in the classroom from the teacher's side about the content, that transfers over to the student. And hopefully we're building, you know, the next round of teachers or the next round of experts in that field. And so we want to be able to work with TSPC and hopefully develop some pathways for teachers to move into that CTE side a little easier. A lot of money has been put into CTE and STEM over the last couple years from the state level, and we appreciate that in our buildings. The next piece of that is the funding for staffing, and that's the piece that's real hard to sustain these programs if we don't have a stable funding in our education system to get teachers in and be able to keep them there. And we have a hard time dedicating staff to a CTE program, not knowing if that funding is going to be around beyond that. And so a lot of money that comes out is through the avenue of grants. Like I talked about the CTE revitalization grant. It's a big dollar piece, and we understand that. But to not have the teaching capacity behind it, it makes it real difficult and in turn kind of puts more pressure on the teachers, the CTE teachers that we do have, and kind of speeds up the burnout for those teachers. So anything we can do around, you know, stabilizing the funding structure for teacher or to be able to add in teaching staff in CTE would be appreciated. The last piece is something that, and I know this is just the Education Committee and it's not the Ways and Means, but looking at the transportation funding around our state is something that we believe needs to have an eye on and be able to take a look at how that's funded. Right now, Three River School District, in looking at districts that are 1,000 students and above, we are spending the most money per student than anybody else in our state. And our buses are going about 9,000 miles a day. And the funding for us, we're spending about $950 per student a year on transportation. That's $100 more than the second district and $200 more than the third district. And that's over 120 districts in our state, 1,000 kids and above. So the gap between us, statistically, you could look at us as an outlier. But it creates a significant funding gap when we look at neighboring districts on what we're able to offer comparatively. And when we talk about being able to provide teachers for CTE and STEM, that's an avenue that we're spending more money in compared to everybody else in the state that we can't dedicate a teacher. And that amounts to a little over a teacher a year for us as a district. And so that's something that we hope can get fixed in some avenue at the state level.
Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. While we have our executive director of TSPC here today, I wanted to ask you specifically about the issue of teacher licensure related to CTE that you mentioned here. What kind of barrier we're looking at? What kind of issue are we looking at there, Casey?
Well, one of the areas that we've struggled with is the in a rural district in the number of teachers that we have and being able to offer or have teachers teach outside of what is their subject, mm-hmm. And out of that highly qualified area. And I know that there's been some work and some relief on that, and we're hoping that that can help clear the way to get more teachers to be able to teach math and manufacturing and be able to have that cross-curricular instead of having to dedicate funding and FTE to a math teacher, a manufacturing teacher, and being able to blur those lines between their skills. And we have science teachers that are also excellent in the STEM field or the CTE field, but their licensure has prohibited that in the past. And so that's something that we're hoping with recent changes and hopefully further changes that we can get more relief on that so we can have teachers teaching multiple subjects at the high school and secondary level.
I appreciate that. I hope we can keep in touch on that and see how things are going.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else? Yeah. Oh. Sorry, yes.
A couple of questions, if I may.
Sure.
Just, you mentioned you have your FBLA program, so
yes.
Congratulations on that. So do you also have Skills USA?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
We have a Skills USA CTSO at one of our at the other high schools. We have FBLA at all three of our high schools. We have Skills USA at one of our high schools.
Okay, great. And hope they're doing well.
They're doing well, yeah.
Okay, I'll bet they are. So we did quite a bit of work on teacher licensure, and I noticed that we have Laura Roach in the audience, mm-hmm. and maybe we could invite her up to give us a report on that.
Actually, she is on the list.
She's on
to
that
talk
list.
About that.
Okay. So
if
she'll address
just
some
a
of
little
that.
Bit, we'll have that conversation.
I'm eager.
Okay, sounds good. Right. Anyone else?
Yeah.
Yes.
No, thank you, Mr.
Representative
Barrett. So do you have a, first of all, are local manufacturers tied into the school with you? And then do you have work experience programs for the for some of the kids to go out and work in the fields?
Yeah, so as part of our manufacturing program of study, we have advisory committees for each one of those high schools. And their local industry. They're part Rogue Community College, and so there are others that have not only industry experience, but also we have some of the higher ed experience in the room too. And so we meet three times a year with those advisory committees to make sure that what we're teaching is matching with industry needs when they're out. As far as the internships, we have approximately 200 different community, and this isn't just in manufacturing, but this is in all areas, but we have a partnership of about 200 local businesses that have signed on to take in job shadows, internships, we call them career highlights, where we would take a group of students in and they could kind of see how that industry works or that job field works. And so we've worked a lot with Grants Pass High School, which is our neighboring district, and we really work collaboratively with them in developing these partnerships because both districts are using the same businesses, and we want to make sure that we're on the same page with Grants Pass at the same time. And so we've got a database of about 200 different employers in our county that have kind of signed on to make that connection with our students.
Thank you. Representative Pat.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for all you're doing. Wow, this is phenomenal. Question I have as it relates to the internships and the opportunities for students. Some of what I hear is that, especially on the manufacturing and construction side, in order for them to actually get work experience and to go out into the field, they have to be 18 years or older. Do you find that as a barrier? Do you have folks that say, you know, there are things we would love to have your kids do, but we are held back because of that?
Yeah, the internships is one that generally gets used, especially in the manufacturing field, as an 18-year-old senior. We do the job shadows piece that kind of gets them in. It's a little less formal. They're not getting their hands as dirty in on it. But so that's how we get them into that. And then as they turn 18, we can extend it into an internship. And specifically in the Illinois Valley, we have students that go from our high school, day after they graduate, they're hired on as welders at one of our local truck body shops. And so the internship piece, yeah, it does. The age requirement does get in the way, but we adapt and we use the job shadows and the career highlights pieces to get kids that experience.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you being here. I'll try to stop by at some point when I get down through that way. Thank you.
That'd be great. Come on down.
Do that.
Thank you.
And we have Daniel Adams and Laura Roach. And we're switching.
It was my fault. I found a mistake last night, and I take your words to heart. It won't happen again.
No,
I apologize.
No problem.
All right.
There we are.
So, good afternoon, Chair Frederick and members of the committee. I'm Laura Roach, and I'm the director of the secondary, post-secondary transitions team in the Department of Education. And our team has accepted the responsibility and the opportunity to help implement the CTE and STEM programs, and especially the new funding that you have given us over the past 4 to 5 years. Last legislative session, our team became responsible for helping to deliver about $30 million across the state to CTE and STEM programs. In an effort to rebuild our programs, we had lost, those of you who have been on this journey with us know that we had lost about 600 programs over the last 10, 15, 20 years. We have rebuilt or reorganized or reformed, and now we've gone from about 600 up to 720. So we are making progress as we go, but it does take time and energy, and as you see the work of Three Rivers, really dedicated staff and commitments of the community to build those programs. They're not developed and implemented overnight. It's very intensive work to get a program up and running and to make sure that it's done with quality and integrity to serve the students to the best of a school's capacity. Among the things that we had last year, I will just refresh you. I didn't bring you a PowerPoint on it. Some of you know this by heart, especially Representative Reardon. I think he probably can recite it all. We had about $9 million in CTE revitalization, and we were able to fund about 25% of the programs that applied for that money, and that money ran from about $150,000 to $300,000 to rebuild that program. We also had secondary career pathway funding, which we're very proud of. It was $3 million. About 40% of our programs qualified. In that particular program, it was an incentive program, and it continues. We were targeting programs of 3 credits or more and underserved students and those programs that could deliver an industry credential. So, again, trying to build size, scope, and quality of those programs and create incentives for schools to keep moving. And that money ranged from $2,000 for someone who had 1 student in a 3-credit program in Eastern Oregon to $45,000 to some of the larger programs. And it went directly to the program. We had student summer programs, and we had over 2,000 students in high school and middle school programs, and some of those programs were filled as soon as the postings were made available. Had great success. We're still working at it. Student leadership organizations, we gave out 163 grants to those organizations. Course equivalency is another piece of work where we had a small amount of money that we're working about what our friends were talking about is how do you not only share teachers, but how do you have course equivalency between CTE and perhaps science or CTE and math? And how do you give credit for those programs where math and science are delivered? And we're working on that, and we had a number of pilot schools working with us, and we'll continue through the course of the year. And then there was statewide teacher development and mentoring. And in particular, we are now have Eastern Oregon and Oregon State University who are providing online courses for those persons who are coming from industry in particular who need some instructional support in order to enter into the classroom. The other part of that is we are currently training mentors for those teachers in coordination with the Department of Education Mentoring Program. We've had 2 programs during the summer for people from industry to work with drones and healthcare, and we're also designing future mentoring and training programs for those teachers to provide some of that support that they need. This is not the total solution to some of the challenges that were referenced earlier, but it is indeed a step forward, and these courses that I'm talking about are online, and so they are available to teachers throughout the year. And there is some desire to build a pathway to the baccalaureate or a post-secondary degree. So we are about that work right now. We have 1 person totally dedicated to the teacher licensure piece, and the processes that we are doing internally in ODE, we're able to turn around in about 2 days internally in our department but we are just a part of the process. So we are working at that as much as we can to support the teachers. We had I went back through the records, a little over 100 new CTE, CTE teachers last year. So we were really just working with CTE 1, and then we had a number of teachers that were already licensed who are getting endorsements. So they work with the Department of Education, and they also work with TSPC, who has the final authority over that licensure. We are looking at some of the experiences that they have, and we have local committees that interview the teachers and help develop professional development plans so they have support as they come from industry into the classroom. So I think it is a fairly in-depth effort, but I think there are some, we know that there are additional challenges that we'll have to address throughout the year. So that's a piece. We also have done FIRST Robotics. We had 184 teams this past year, and we're now preparing the 216, 217 awards.
If you can hold on just a second. You had that many in Oregon, 100 and?
Yeah, 184 teams we funded.
And these were all high school level or all or middle school, and which were they particular
both,
levels?
Both.
All of them? Okay.
So 4 to 12 to participate. So it's in here it says students in grades 4 to 12.
4 to 12. Okay. Thank you.
So the last thing I would mention is we now have 11 STEM hubs across the state, and they are working through a process of building their infrastructure and their board of directors or whatever organization they have, and they've also are being given some programming funding. So it's been a big adventure this past year. You've kept us busy, and so thank you for the opportunity and the commitment that you've made to help us move forward in this work, because it really is incredible to be able to give those students the opportunity to have a choice about their education. And many of our students take these courses and they transfer their skills to maybe a different degree or a different opportunity, but they have a choice and they become engaged. And the student leadership organizations, the kind of work our fellow partners were talking about, definitely make a difference in the lives of students. So thank you. Daniel has been looking at the data, continues to look at the data. We do not have the comprehensive set of data that we would like to have, just by virtue of CTE is a very complex set of data when you go to so many program areas, so many different schools. But Dan's done a great job in trying to summarize it, and so he's going to share with you what we're continuing to see that is very promising.
Chair Frederick, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Daniel Adams. I'm Program Accountability and Data Specialist for the CTE team at the Oregon Department of Education. I also am a product of Three Rivers Schools. I went to Fort Benoit Elementary and Lincoln Savage Middle School, so I'm excited to talk about how we're doing STEM. I'd like to dive in a little bit to how Three Rivers is doing. So as you can see, Oregon CTE concentrators in the graduating class of 2014 were 15.5 points more likely to graduate than students statewide. And we'll talk a little bit more about what that means. So there are a few places I want to shine a spotlight today. And just for the sake of clarity, the blue bars here are going to represent CTE concentrators in the graduating class of 2014. The gold bars are going to represent the entire student population statewide. Let's start with the gaps between the blue bars and the gold bars. What these gaps tell us is that CTE concentrators graduate at higher rates across every student population we measure. The bigger the gap, the better CTE concentrators do compared to students statewide in the same group. And some of these gaps are very big. Among CTE concentrators, Hispanic Latino students, African American students, and Native American students graduated more than 20 percentage points ahead of the same student population statewide.
Back up just a second. I'm curious about the numbers. One of the problems we have within the Portland schools has been the cutback in CTE programs. So as you see the number of CTE graduates in terms of African American graduates, I would not be surprised to find that there are fewer of those graduates than we've had in the past. So that gap in terms of numbers would have an impact on the number of kids who actually have the opportunity to be in CTE in the Portland schools. So that's one of the things that would be a concern of mine.
I certainly understand that. And we have cohort graduation data for the graduating class of 2013 and the graduating class of 2014. 2015 is currently being worked on, and we don't have anything before 13. So we will touch on statewide numbers for 13, and I'd be happy to get you additional data on student populations if that would be helpful.
That would be helpful. Considering that they cut back on all but two shop classes in the Portland schools up until about 2012, 2013, would not be surprised to find that those are really small numbers.
I do have the N for this number, if that's helpful. The N for Black African American students is 231 statewide.
Statewide, and
that's correct.
Okay, that's very interesting. Okay, thank you.
May I make a comment?
Yes, go ahead.
One of the things I did understand from Jeannie Yerkovich, who's our CTE regional coordinator, is out of the funding that came forward this last iteration, and also with Portland's work, they reinstated approximately 35 programs are built. So that is not nearly enough in the Portland area.
No, but it's a start, considering that, you know, all the high schools but one really got rid of their CTE programs for the
right.
most part, and then you end up with an alternative school doing it. Right. That was about it. Then when you suddenly start to recover, and if we get more in the middle schools and others, that'll help a great deal. So thank you.
So let's go to the gray line right across the screen there. These CTE data, like I said, are the most recent available. They're for the graduating class of 2014. The gray bar is the statewide graduation rate for all Oregon students in the class of 2014. That was 72%. The negative gap between the gold bars and the gray line, you know what that is. That's the achievement gap. I'm sure you're already very familiar with that. The negative gap there means that across Oregon, some student groups graduate at rates lower than the statewide average of 72%. The positive gap between the blue bars and the gray line indicates that CTE concentrators not only do better than students in the same group statewide, CTE concentrators in every racial and ethnic student population we measure actually graduate above the statewide average of 72%. So, in my terminology, I call this positive gap the CTE achievement gap. And it's positive, and it is impressive every time and exciting every time I look at it. So we talked about the fact that the most recent gap in 2014 is around 16 percentage points. We also have data, as I mentioned, for the class of 2013. That gap was even bigger. In 2013, CTE concentrators were 17 percentage points more likely to graduate in 4 years. Another question I often get is there any research that could help buttress these Oregon data? And the answer is yes. A 2013 study of Mississippi students found that CTE students in career pathways graduated 7 percentage points above the statewide average for all students. A 2016 study of Arkansas students found that CTE concentrators are 21 percentage points more likely to graduate from high school. This is the part that I like the most. The study also found CTE concentrators are more likely to be employed, more likely to have higher earnings, and more likely to be enrolled in two-year college than similar non-CTE concentrators. As I mentioned, I'm a former Fort Vinoy and Lincoln Savage student. I'm really honored to be here presenting with Three Rivers, and I'd like to specifically highlight some of their results for CTE concentrators. So let's start with CTE concentrators in Three Rivers School District, compare their results to all students district-wide. In 2013, CTE concentrators in Three Rivers were 13 points more likely to graduate than students district-wide, and in 2014, CTE concentrators in Three Rivers were 8 points more likely to graduate. And these are Fort Vinoy Elementary School colors, as best I recall. It was a long time ago. We're going to switch it up to Lincoln Savage colors. So looking at Three Rivers School District CTE concentrators compared to students statewide, in 2014, CTE concentrators in Three Rivers, or sorry, in 2013, CTE concentrators were 12 points more likely to graduate. And in 2014, CTE concentrators were 1 point more likely to graduate than were students statewide. The last question I almost always get is, okay, we can tell that CTE is working, but how is it working? The best evidence available is anecdotal feedback that we get from the field. What we hear from students is that in CTE classrooms, students never ask, when am I ever going to use this? That's, It's not a question that comes up. We hear from teachers that CTE classrooms practice applied learning, allowing students to build skills through what the research calls deliberate practice. And we hear from administrators that rather than telling students there's one way to be successful, you have to go to college, CTE classrooms start by asking the student what their dream is and then helping each student move toward that dream. If the student's dream is 2 or 4 year college, we've heard the evidence that CTE programs of study create college-ready students. If the student's dream is a rewarding, high-wage, high-demand career in their hometown, CTE concentrators finish with the skills and experience employers say they need. While we wait for the definitive study on how CTE works, we can listen to the voices of students, faculty, and administrators. They tell us that CTE works by helping students build the skills they need to achieve their own dreams. And I do have a video. Should we give it a shot? See if it works.
We'll see if it works.
Right? For Springfield High School junior Leah Crimbo, her elective courses changed her path in high school.
I absolutely hated high school. Didn't like the people here, didn't like the classes, didn't want to do my work.
But then she tried the hands-on course for automotive tech, giving her a new outlook.
It just sparked an interest, and now that I have automotive in the mornings, it gives me motivation to get up, go to school, do my work right so I can stay in these classes.
Mm-hmm. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? A lot of praise, probably, but not no questions. Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. So what are the three high schools in the Three Rivers? You know,
Hidden Valley, Illinois Valley, and North Valley, as I recall?
Mm-hmm. Are they all in Josephine County?
Yeah.
As I recall, they are. Mm-hmm. It's been a while now.
I was asking the wrong group, I guess.
I'm a long time out of Lincoln Savage Middle School.
Yes.
So is Rep. Barreto going to be making a recruiting trip to Three Rivers, is it?
No. I was just listening, though, and Grants Pass was, you know, it's in Josephine County. Grants Pass High School was not in their district, but then he mentioned, what's the river down there, the Illinois. Mm-hmm. So I was just curious as to the three high schools. It seems kind of spread out.
We're the donut around Grants Pass. So we go out there from the California border.
You're going to need to come up to the top here. Front here, thank you. And to reintroduce yourself.
Casey Alderson, Director of Secondary Ed for Three River School District. So the connection between us and Grants Pass, we're the sort of the donut around Grants Pass. Grants Pass is the school district in the city. We're the county. And geographically, we stretch from, we actually have a couple kids that live over the California border up to milepost 67.
So the same program that you have for your high schools, does Grants Pass have the same and other schools in the area?
Right now we have, they have more programs of study or different programs of study, and it's based off of teacher capacity. We don't have a teacher right now that could offer the healthcare program of study, and it's something that we're looking into adding, and so it's kind of teacher dependent and is often driven by building needs, building administrators, and sort of listening to the community around, and so on what it would be to add. And so they have some computer programming program of studies that we don't offer. We have the agriculture and automotive that they don't offer, so that's why for us the summer piece is real important for us to give the students in Grants Pass the same opportunity to come out to the Illinois Valley and do the automotive. And then our kids from out there being able to go into Grants Pass and work in their computer programming pieces. And so it really is while we are competing districts for ADM, we are collaboratively working to change the community.
Representative Reardon and then Representative McClellan.
Thank you. Just a quick question for Laura. On a bill that we worked on about the teacher licensure, and I can't remember if we put it in the bill or talked about having a website so that people could understand if you wanted to come from industry or, you know, better information on a website about how do I become a CTE teacher. Is that
correct?
Can you tell me the status of that?
My understanding, the Chief Education Office has developed a website for teachers and is most recently included work for CTE teachers in that, and I, my understanding is that's transferring to TSPC and they will maintain that. But our staff will, I'm sure, contribute information to that website to help keep it fresh and engaging, and as we see new pieces of work that they can add to it, they will.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Representative McLean and then Representative Wilson.
Well, I was just going to compliment you on being good about having STEM, you know, STEM classes, but I consider your FBLA a STEAM class, and so that you're connecting and you're helping make that transition to make it even a richer type of hands-on experience. And I do believe Hidden Valley may also have a speech and debate class, which is another really good STEAM class. And it's really helping, you know, really concentrate on the hands-on, but you have the mind on too, and being able to communicate some of the skills that you have to the teams that you work in are really important. And then I'm old enough that a lot of these classes are not new classes, but what I really loved about your comment was the fact that we lost 600 and now we're back up to 700 plus. And in the high schools where I taught and the high school that I attended, we had 5, 6, 7 of these different types of experiences and opportunities for career paths. So thank heavens we're getting back to that. And I think that we're doing a good job of providing. The one question I have is, are all schools able to do this? Because when you do grants, you still are doing competitive grants, and there's still a limited dollar amount. And so I want to make sure that it really is all students and not just students in some areas or in some high schools or some school, middle schools or whatever.
I, Chair Frederick and members and Representative McLean, I would say in many, 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 in most of our high school, but not all schools. Again, I would suggest that the teacher issue and the funding issue is probably the primary reason. We were able to fund, like as I mentioned before, about 40% of those programs, a little over 40% of those programs last year through the Career Pathway funding. And if we can keep that funding and keep our programs moving, the reason we weren't able to fund more is we set the bar at 3 credits because of the size, scope, and quality issue. Many of our programs are still at the 2-credit level, and we would like to see them move to 3-credit because we know that that creates a stronger path to our pathway. So we are definitely working on it with your help, and are committed to the idea that we would love to have CTE, STEM, whatever it is that can serve all students, be a part of that course curriculum. So with your help, we'll continue to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we've learned a lot today, and I think we bear a certain responsibility as a vanguard here for K-12 education here on the House side to carry forward on what we've seen today. There are still a number of kids not graduating from high school, and that's probably caused by other issues that we can't necessarily affect here. But I think we've seen a pathway that we can have an effect on, and I really hope going forward that we will get behind CTE and STEM or STEAM, as it may be, because obviously it makes a real difference. And we've got an abysmal situation here with absenteeism and with graduation rates not being up to par. And this is obviously, to me, a path forward. So I hope that as we regather in the next session that we keep this impetus and realize that we have an opportunity to be real spokespeople for this methodology of getting the kids here. I see the governor's on the bandwagon, too, and that certainly won't hurt. And so I hope we can just keep pushing this forward. So, again, thank you for your enthusiasm and effort on this, and I trust that we'll be cooperative.
Thank you.
Thank you. I want to anyone else? I want to thank you for being here. This is one of the reasons I happen to love this committee and working on some of these issues. It's not as simple as some folks would like for it to be. We need to not only have CTE, but have a way of making sure that we're supporting it, and have that, and it's not taking money away from the class sizes issue.
as well as other things. I also found it really interesting today that we were dealing with a nationally board certified teacher and a regimen that's pretty intense, mm-hmm. and concern about how we get CTE teachers as well, who and trying to make sure that we aren't just allowing other folks to come in who don't have the resources and the support system to be effective as CTE teachers. So we need to have that kind of a balance that we struggle with, and I just really appreciate today this kind of work, and thank you for doing the work that you're doing.
Thank you. We appreciate your support.
Thank you. I'm going to close this meeting on CTE. But we need to say one last thing. And the one last thing is this: we're going to miss this guy sitting next to me. Richard, you have been extraordinary, absolutely extraordinary, and it's really obvious the kind of work that you've done. Everyone on the committee, and I can say for sure that Margaret Doherty wanted to make sure that you knew how much she appreciated the work that you've done for us. We wanted to give you a quick card on some things, but we're going to miss you. At this particular role, you're moving into another role that just to continue back there. He'll be sitting back there talking with us about the Oregon School Boards Association. That's good. That means we have some continuity.
So you're going to the School Boards Association, is that right? Is that what I heard?
Mr. Chair, Representative Peluso, this is my last asset meeting. I'm going to be working for the School Boards Association next week.
Nice. After he finishes his report.
After I finish my report, yeah, I have to finish the report for Representative Plain. Yeah. That's true.
But having this kind of knowledge and professionalism, mm-hmm. is extraordinary, and we really truly appreciate it. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Well. With that, I'm going to close the hearing, the House Committee on Education meeting for September 21st. Right?
Yeah.
So? Good deal.
Sounds good.
Good committee.
Sounds good.
Good committee.
Right?
Yeah. So? Good.